With the recent Acolyte trailer dropping and the dislikes and hate pouring in, it begs the question, are we finally starting to see the total rejection of the Godboss narrative?
Over and over again, Hollywood has forced the Godboss trope down their audiences' throats. For decades now, movie studios have tried to make it work, with absolutely no success. It doesn't matter which franchise they try and stuff it into, from Marvel movies to Ghostbusters and from Terminator to Star Wars, studios just can't seem to learn their lesson.
But is the new Ghostbusters movie and the outpouring of hate towards the Acolytes signs that things are finally starting to change?
Has the era of the Godboss finally come to an end? Well, let's explore how Hollywood dug this hole for themselves and why they're finally realizing they should put down the shovel. So where did it all start? Well, when we talk about a character being a Godboss, we don't just mean a strong female character. In fact, the whole archetype is fairly modern for Hollywood. Just think back to movies from the 80s or even the 70s. Ripley from the Alien franchise or Sarah Connor from Terminator 1 and 2 were just strong lead characters that happened to be women. Their heroism was defined by their actions, their gender was completely secondary to that. The strength of these realistic, relatable characters is just part of what makes these films timeless classics. We could have gone on with more of these kinds of characters in films and everything would have been fine. Hollywood would have made more good movies and people would have wanted to watch them. But instead, we got served identity politics. The big studios seem to collectively forget how to write a good female character. All the nuance and motivation that made these characters special were thrown out the window. It's been going on for a while, but over the early 2010s, certain tropes started getting far more widespread. Hollywood has been making good action movies with female leads for years, but they started acting like it was a completely new idea. It was a useful tool at first. Hollywood could take a well-loved franchise or movie, skip the hard creative work, and just tell the same story but with a gender swapped. It gave the film marketing appeal separate from what the movie was actually about. The idea that you could support equal rights and stick it to the misogynist just by buying the ticket was what they hoped people would think. But by using these franchises and these characters to push some pseudo-political point, the actual movies lost all their character and what made them good in the first place. The point which they were trying to make was deeply flawed as well. Instead of actually being good role models, this kind of strong female character never went beyond those basic character traits. All the female characters around them were weak and useless, whilst the leading women were constantly made to seem superior. They didn't actually have to have a unique character generally, or struggles to go through and overcome. It was the world they lived in that changed and realized their worth. It was like these movies had taken the James Bond stereotype and gender flipped it, whilst also taking out all the fun of these old films as well. And over time, these characters cropped up more and more.
One of the most recent examples of this is The Acolyte, a new series in the Star Wars saga that is completely hated by almost everyone online. Why? Well, aside from the shoddy script,
close your eyes. Tell me what comes into your mind.
That was memed into oblivion by the comments, it seems like fans are just sick to death of another forced-in Godboss narrative. As unsurprisingly, the Acolyte main lead actor fits the bill to be perfect for Disney casting, identifying as a black lesbian and non-binary actor, who is also known for their political activism. It seems like once again, the series is focusing more on diversity, inclusion, and Godboss power over broad galaxy-spanning conflicts. You know, the stuff that everyone actually wants to watch. Across the board, it seems like everyone is concerned that the series might prioritize political and social messages over the adventure and epic storytelling that actually made Star Wars successful to begin with.
Hello there.
But that begs the question, how did we get here? Well, this Godboss narrative has seemingly just come out of nowhere and seems to have never left. Even though fans hate this, why does it keep coming up? And why does Hollywood refuse to let go of the Godboss narrative?
A good early example of the trope slowly working its way into the mainstream was in the first Disney Star Wars movie. When it came out, the film was most well liked by both audiences and critics. It successfully walked the tightrope between creating something new and staying true to the original, but it did have some warning signs for the future of the franchise. Rey's character was pretty much well regarded in general, but people still thought she might be slightly overpowered. At the climax of the movie, she soundly beat Kylo Ren in a lightsaber duel, who had trained his whole life for this moment. Well, there's the scene where she apparently fixes the Millennium Falcon by ripping out some computer chip. So she already knows more about Han's ship than Han himself, who's been flying it and repairing it for decades now. But despite small moments like this, it looked like Disney were on track to revitalize Star Wars and fans were excited for Episode 8, if only they had known what was really in store. But it wasn't until 2016 and the release of the Ghostbusters reboot that we saw a strong reaction to this from audiences.
As for me, my main complaint about the movie was that it was quite simply dumb.
I could spend about 2 hours outlining all the things it gets wrong.
A little context helps explain why the 2016 Ghostbusters was such a huge flop. Fans of the franchise have gotten two excellent movies. Modern classics with tight pacing, great humor, and effects that even hold up today. But since 1989, after the sequel was released, the third movie in the franchise had been stuck in development hell. Scripts were written then scrapped, people were constantly teased by the idea of a new movie with the same genius actors and writers behind it. But after 20 years of waiting, a new movie in the franchise finally got announced. At first, the fans were joyful, excited even, but that would quickly change. Every new detail Sony released about the upcoming reboot just made it sound even worse. First, the original writers that worked on the originals weren't going to be involved. Harold Ramis, who had recently passed away, and Dan Aykroyd was only an executive producer. When it was announced to be an all-woman reboot telling what amounted to the original story, it got even harder to stomach. Then the trailer, which was completely full of cringe jokes, lazy stereotypes, and awful effects, was the final nail in the coffin. It was like Sony had reused the Ghostbusters name and the plot, but had forgotten about everything else that made the original so special. Looking back, it's easy to understand why fans were so annoyed. It's not an understatement that most fans of the original hated the 2016 reboot, and the identity politics on offer failed to bring in new audiences. Before the release, the director said that it would need at least a $500 million box office to even break even. And of course, it didn't even make half of that, ending its miserable run at just under $230 million. And now you would think this would be the end of these kind of reboots and identity politics in films, right? If Hollywood executives have one defining character trait, it's that they want to make lots of money. So why did they keep making these films that were flopping? If one flop wasn't enough, how about 10 or 100? When would they learn? Well, the next 5 years would show how dedicated Hollywood was to forcing this terrible idea through. Disney was some of the main proponents of the Goldbus archetype, and they'd prove it with their next Star Wars movie. You see, if Rey was overpowered in the first film, she was pretty much omnipotent in the second. All of her character flaws, which really hadn't been developed before, were completely gone. Just as the progressive culture war was waging, she would win every fight suddenly, mastering things people train their whole lives to do, destroying Luke in a fight the first day she meets him. It's as if Luke had beaten up Yoda before he taught him how to use the Force. Later on, she easily gets a triple kill with one laser blast from the Millennium Falcon. Meanwhile, Disney seemed to think that character development meant having Rey scream and shout in every fight, whilst also being the best Jedi to ever live. When you remember that Jedi are supposed to be the least emotional people in the universe, it doesn't really fit. Luke suffered for his mistakes and even lost his hand at the end of episode 5. Rey never lost anything. But Rey wasn't the only example in just this one film. There's also Vice Admiral Holdo, the arrogant captain who makes idiotic decisions while talking down to her veteran troops. Then we're supposed to think she was doing the right things all along because it was to enable her own suicidal 1 in a million plan of flying her ship into the enemies. She gets incredibly lucky and it ends up working out magically. But she could have still just explained it a little bit instead of making everyone mutiny.
I believe that Vice Admiral Holdo may be the worst written character of all time. She's definitely the worst Star Wars character ever.
You can see what Disney was trying to accomplish here. By opening Star Wars up to a new audience and giving young girls more role models obviously isn't a bad decision, as women are the best market to sell to and make money from. But when the writing is so poor and the characters are so unrealistic and stupid, it ends up backfiring. Characters with actual potential that the fans clearly liked were swept under the rug as well. It seemed to the audience like Finn was getting set up to be one of the main characters. He had personality, his own struggles and tough backstory, and he wasn't some unstoppable force of nature. Rather than really interacting with the main plot, they sent him to free space llamas from captivity, accompanied by a completely new character. And their lack of chemistry is so clear. The film could have been so much better if they had developed his relationship with Poe, instead both Poe and Finn are just used as tools to stick it to the misogynists. This point they were trying to make was only an outer layer, something to try and hide the disdain and callousness for the franchise they were continuing. The actual film, under all the girl power, just kind of sucked, and it completely forgot what made Star Wars so special. It's estimated that The Last Jedi made around $400 million in profit. Whilst this is an insane amount of money, it's still far less than Disney was probably hoping for, as how many of those ticket sales were from the simple fact it was a new Star Wars movie, or the hype from the first in the trilogy. But among the core audience, The Last Jedi was laughable, and it tainted the new Disney Star Wars movies for good. This wasn't something that could kill franchises at their prime, but it did add up with all the other ways film studio disrespected their properties. At first though, it would gradually add up in cringeworthy, poorly executed scenes. Marvel were too late to the party, but they started getting in on the trope with that infamous scene from Endgame. You've probably seen it before, where all the women characters conveniently line up and run into battle with the camera panning on each of their faces.
Don't worry. She's got help.
But it wasn't the point itself that people took exception to. There's plenty of scenes that did the same thing which people actually liked. Just look at the girls get a done scene from The Boys, or even just a similar scene from Infinity War. They actually made narrative sense and weren't obviously just there for optics. Captain Marvel had similar problems. It was a big office hit, but that was almost guaranteed. Firstly, it came out in the period between Infinity War and Endgame, the absolute height of Marvel's popularity. That guaranteed it quite a bit of success. It wasn't an awful movie either, just forgettable. Although the girl boss tropes were still all over it, it did have a generally detrimental effect on the franchise as a whole. There were small things, like the reckoning of Nick Fury's scar. Before the film came out, fans could imagine what the story was behind it. Now we just know it's a cat scratch. But overall, Captain Marvel was just so overpowered compared to the rest of the heroes that they needed an excuse for her to leave before any actual tension could build up in Endgame. It even undercuts the entire girl power scene within Endgame, because we know Captain Marvel could just handle it all anyway.
Looking at this movie as a cheap, bland, soulless, and divisive attempt to cash in on feminism and contemporary identity politics, featuring an unpopular comic book character that's been repeatedly cancelled and relaunched with increasing futility, and played by an actress that possesses all the charm, charisma, and likability of my underwear after a 2-hour gym session.
If they weren't shoving the trope into Marvel, Disney was undoing everything Rogue One and Episode 7 had accomplished for Star Wars. When The Rise of Skywalker finally came out in 2019, it left a lot of fans disappointed. Seemingly shocked by people's reaction to The Last Jedi and the disregard for the property, they switched over to a whole new kind of lazy writing. Some of the changes seemed like they were just trying to turn it into Star Wars again, but they overcompensated and went too far in the other direction. Nearly anything would have been better than just saying somehow Palpatine returned and bringing him back. Try to forget about that time he was blown up. They'd already done the bigger Death Star story with a Starkiller base, so now they needed something even better. And why not 10,000 Star Destroyers? On the way to finding all of this, Rey gains healing powers and finds the map by lining up a knife she found with the wreckage of the Death Star. Rey had to find the exact spot where the knife she randomly found would line up perfectly and reveal where the plot was going next. Of course she managed it. She can heal fatal wounds and outduel Sith Lords. It was only Rise of Skywalker status as a main story Star Wars movie that saved it from bombing. Otherwise, it would have suffered the same fate as films like Solo, a Star Wars story once people found out it sucked. Instead, the major issues with the film robbed Disney of making even more money from it, money that they would have loved to have later on after they doubled down on these stupid tropes. But whilst Disney were relieving on lazy writing and tired political messages to get by, some of the studios were finally taking notice. It was the obvious choice for Sony to abandon the 2016 movie, but then they went on to make a heartfelt tribute to the original, Ghostbusters Afterlife, which released in 2020. And this was everything the 2016 film should have been and more. The original cast made an impact on the story. It wasn't full of cringeworthy humor. Everything that needed to be there was there. The respect and deference they showed to the original whilst telling a new story was exactly what fans had spent decades asking for. If only they'd done it this way the first time. Of course, Disney weren't listening. They were still coming off the high that Endgame brought. It showed in their films. Instead of focusing on making good movies, they substituted with the same tired tropes. People already know that girls can be heroes and main characters. It's not some controversial idea that they need to constantly breathe life into it before we all forget again. But Disney thought that the political message alone would push Black Widow, the Marvels, and She-Hulk into profits. Black Widow allegedly lost $600 million through its digital release. Disney blames piracy. A more sensible take, however, would be seeing a bad movie for what it really is. The Marvels had a budget of around $220 million according to Forbes. You can be conservative and add another $100 million for marketing and distribution. Compare that to the roughly $200 million it made at the box office, and Disney easily lost over $100 million. Then there's She-Hulk, which reportedly cost $200 million to make. It's almost like a parody of the trope at this point. Everything is in there, from the stupidly powerful and smart protagonist to the humbled male characters who just can't compete. It's all wrapped up in a ball of awful writing, bad CGI, and cringeworthy humor. The budget seems so massive for what we ended up with. Rumors started that it was all just some sort of money laundering scheme. The executives at Disney still haven't learned their lesson. The reception to their planned Snow White remake, which they announced would pull off the same stunts, was awful. Just awful. So awful, in fact, that they delayed it by a year and walked back on nearly everything they said about the film.
Sorry, Snow White and the seven magical, diverse, gender non-conforming, vertically challenged creatures. Call me crazy if you like, but something tells me this remake isn't going to be so well regarded.
It remains to be seen whether they'll actually change anything, though. With their track record, you'd be forgiven for doubting them. But studios other than Disney seem to be finally getting the message. Even if they're not listening to fans, they're definitely listening to their accountants. So many of these lazy movies that hide under political correctness bombed terribly. It's why the next installment of the Ghostbuster franchise is set to continue on the previous film's path of redemption. People were soured to the franchise after that awful 2016 film. Not that they've proven they can actually make a good Ghostbusters movie, but people are paying attention again. You can only hope they won't ruin this momentum. If the big movie studios are going to care about anything at all, it's their bottom line. With one or two exceptions, they've all seen the writing on the wall. There will always be flops, but maybe in the future, they won't start a Twitter war over their failure and must get a social justice. It won't be too long before they find another political cause to misappropriate, but until they do, we might see some decent blockbusters once again.